All right, Erev Tov.
Erev Tov to you.
Good evening and welcome to Masterpiece Theater. No, Mishmor LeDavid. This evening's study is going to be Psalm 23, Perek Chaf Gimel, Chapter 23.
It's interesting. It is probably one of the most well-known of the Psalms.
When I've been to funerals that were run by non-Orthodox clergy members, Jewish non-Orthodox clergy members, they always quote this. They all know it by heart, even. And my understanding is that even at non-Jewish funerals, if I remember in Little House on the Prairie, that's what they would say also in the funerals. That it's such a... It's one of the more well-known ones and very strongly associated with the time in which we say it, which is customarily at a funeral or at a shiva house. We also say it Shalashidus, right, every week Shalashidus. And some customs even insert it into the Shabbos davening as well on Friday night, is my understanding, although I haven't found which customs, but somebody told me that that's a custom. Some Hasidic circles, they say, before benching every day. So it's a pretty popular piece. Let's read through it. We're going to read through it in the Hebrew, and we'll touch a little bit on the English. The translation, as always, is not 100%, but it's close enough. And you'll find something, I think, rather surprising. Tell me what images come to mind when we read it through. Mizmor LeDavid. Adonai ro'i lo echzar. Vin'ot desha yarbiteni. Almei menuchot inahaleni. Nafshi yeshovei. Yancheni b'mad lechedek lema'an shemo. Gam kielich begei talmadet lo irara ki atai madi. Shiftecha umishantecha himayi nachamuni. Taroch lefanai shulchan neged sorerai. Dishanta Vashemin Roshi Koshi Rivaya Achtova Chesed Yer Defuni Koli Mekayai Vishati Vivet Adonai Leorech Yamin. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He leads me, in Ot Deshe Yarbiteni, he spreads me out in very fertile grassy fields. Amle Menucho Inahaleni, he brings me to calm waters to drink. Nafshi Yeshovev, he brings my soul back. Yamchini B'magle Tzedek, he redirects me into the right path. L'ma'an Shemel, for his name. Gam Ki Elech V'Geit HaMavet, even if I would walk in the valley of darkness, Lo Irara, I will not fear evil. Ki Atai Madi, for you are with me. Shivtecha Mishantecha, your staff and your walking stick. Hema Yinachamuni, they will comfort me. Taroch Lefanai Shulchan, set before me, you will set before me a table. Neged Torai, opposite my enemies. Ishanta Vashem and Roshi, you will anoint my head, you will rub my head with oil. Kosi Rivaya, my cup runneth over. Ach Tov V'Chesed Yer Defuni, only good and chesed. I will chase after, and they will chase after me, Kol Yimei Chayai, all the days of my life, V'shavti B'Veis Hashem, and I will dwell in the house of God, L'Orech Yamim, forever and ever. What strikes you? What imagery is in this poem? It's a poem.
Outdoors, nature, the goodness, the calming waters, all the things that we think that we traditionally associate with beauty of the outdoors.
Okay.
You're the sheep and Hashem is the shepherd doing all that stuff. You're actually the sheep.
Okay. Not through the whole thing or just part of it?
In the beginning.
In the beginning. Good. What about the imagery that shows up in the second half? Very different than the first half. Mm-hmm. In the second half, you're no longer a sheep. You're a guest in the home of somebody. You're being pampered.
Forever.
Up the wazoo. Mm-hmm. Forever, in every way. Good. Does the, is the phrase pastoral idol, I hope I pronounced that properly.
I-D-Y-L-L.
Yeah,
I-D-Y-O-L. Idol.
Idol.
Yeah.
Idol. Test girl.
I
there's a form of literature and a painting by Cézanne that is not appropriate to show in this group, but
to imagine
in this building, but perhaps in an art museum, called Pastoral Idol. It's a genre of literature. What, anyone familiar with this genre? This pastoral idol. And of art also, of painting. You know, you've been to these museums of the pictures and the, not just the nature scene of the shepherd out there playing his lute or his mandolin, and everything is all great and fine. It's like, you know, like movies of Victorian times and everyone's sitting around and drinking tea.
Do you ever see Fantasia as a
of
kid?
Course.
So
and
when they
the
did the Beethoven as an adult. Well, the
yes.
whole one of the sixth symphony, the Pastoral
yes.
symphony.
Correct.
Every
there
time
you go.
I
Pastoral.
Mm-hmm. Every time I read this, I see those little fawns and those little birdies and what do they call it? Centaurs playing
yeah,
and frolicking. That,
yeah.
That's the image. That's the feeling. The feeling I get.
Right. The only major difference, first of all, it's interesting. I was going to bring it to you. I went online. There's something online that you should, if somebody asked me once where I find things online. There's this great resource online called Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia.
Wikipedia,
Wikipedia.
I just found out why it's called that.
K-I.
Because in Hawaiian, wiki means fast. Like wiki
okay.
means fast. So that's
right.
why it's called a Wikipedia.
Wikipedia exists.
Wait, go ahead.
W-I-K-I-P-E-D-I-A. Wikipedia. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia, but the beauty of it is that it's constantly being edited. It is editable. You can edit it. If you are an expert in a particular area and you see information in an article that's incorrect, you can correct it. So it's constantly able to be fixed. There's a ton of Jewish stuff in there. Somebody sat down and entered, I think, every entry in the Judaica Encyclopedia.
Oh my.
Anyway, and on Wikipedia, I was looking up what is this genre, pastoral idol, and it said that the purpose of such a medium is to indicate the simplicities of life in an unrealistic way. And everybody knows that it's not realistic, but it's, you know, just focusing on the simple parts of life. You know, we talk about the some of our great leaders being shepherds. Who are our great leaders who are shepherds?
Moshe.
David. Very appropriate. Who else? Yaakov in this week's parsha. Yaakov is a shepherd. We talk about, I was teaching to my students that last week, we were talking about Moshe, and there's a story about Moshe and a little sheep. That he's leading his sheep out to pasture, and one little sheep runs away. And it runs away and finds itself, like, under this overhang, under a rocky overhang, and all of a sudden a stream appears in front of him, and he goes forward to drink from the stream. And at that point, Moshe comes to him and says, "Wow, I didn't realize how thirsty you are. You must be so tired." And he lifts up the sheep on his back and carries her back to his flock, a lamb, carries her back to his flock. And Hashem said, if this is how careful you are to take care of sheep that belong to a human being, meaning his father-in-law, then you are worthy of taking care of my sheep, of the sheep of God. And we always talk about shepherding being like the best occupation for someone who's going to be a leader, because why? I'll ask you, why?
Because you have a huge diversity of
dumb sheep.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to be politically correct, and you've got to meet their needs. You've got to corral them and keep them unified and keep them together, and they're all their individual needs as well as their group needs.
You don't make enemies, you know, but all of the politics of leadership, you just haven't had it, like, working your way up through the ranks. You can just, you can, like, refine your own morals.
See, so it's interesting to me about that we always talk about it, that is an interesting way of looking at it. But remember, here's what a shepherd does. He takes these sheep. He travels for days and days and days until he finds grazing land. And then he sets up camp for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it's him and those fluffy little sheep. And that's it. And maybe his little Khalil that he brought with him. That's it. Now, we talk about it, that that's a time for introspection and that he could develop his moral. But if you have no one to base it on, you have no one to bounce it off. You have no experience really leading people with all their diversity, and people are very much more complicated than sheep, thank God. You know, this is, I don't understand it. It's something that blows my mind about why a shepherd is such a great model for a leader. You're taking this guy who's sitting in complete and utter solitude for months at a time.
Patience.
No. Nope. That's what it is.
Patience. It's also responsibility. You have to be responsible for all of their needs.
Okay.
But patience is a model.
But patience, I like the patience also. Yeah.
Again, the fact that he was conscious if one left the flock. He wasn't content to say, oh, girl, you know, I got
I want to know who stayed with the other sheep, though, when he ran off to get that one flock. I hope he had some assistance with him. Anyway, after that little...
Do they have a dog?
Do they have a dog?
I don't know. Were dogs in that area? Were dogs in the Middle East at that time?
Kanani.
Sure, why
Kanani dog.
Yeah.
It's an ancient breed.
Okay. There you go. Anyway, so I was looking on Wikipedia, back to Wikipedia, for this term, pastoral idol, and it spoke about it being a simplistic thing, and it said that it started around the time of the Greeks. And I'm like, And then I remembered, we're not looking at this as literature, although there is value to it as literature, but according to them, also biblical literature happened around the time of the Greeks, too, so I guess they weren't so off. Okay, so let's look at our source. I brought you a number of the three people that we're going to look at today in terms of understanding first what this perek means and then trying to understand why we say it when we do. The three main people are Ibn Ezra, in their order of historical appearance, is Ibn Ezra, Radak, and Amos Chacham. Ibn Ezra was a medieval Spanish exegete, commentator, guy who wrote things on the Torah. Radak lived a little bit after him, but also in medieval times. They lived about 200 years apart. Radak was in Provence in southern France, which combined the traditions of France and Spain. And Amos Chacham lived way much later. I don't know where he lived. I'm assuming in Israel at some point. And his comments, he is the editor of the, I've mentioned it before, the pink or purple set of Nevi'im put out by Moshe Harav Cook. He's the editor of that. So those are the three people that we're going to be looking at. And I'm going to answer Mrs. Dubin's question as we progress. I answer it every week. You weren't here last week, but I answer it every week. Okay.
Even when I'm not here.
Even when you're not here, I answer it.
So what was the answer?
Find the computer, log on to the internet, and listen to this year.
I don't have a computer.
I didn't say get on your computer. I said find a computer and get on it. Spalter.net. Okay. Mishmor LeDavid, it begins. This is a song for David. Hashem ro'i lo echzar. God is my shepherd. Ibn Ezra says as follows something very interesting. Zeh mishmor nechbad. This is a very honorable Mizmor. V'dame atzmo kiseh. The author, the poet, compares himself to a sheep. Shemishanto al haroeh, who depends on the shepherd. V'hine Hashem hu haroeh oti. And God is the one who is my shepherd. Al kein lo echsar kol. Therefore, I will never lack anything. V'hatam lo yechsar li masha nitarich kederach malei. Lo echsar means I will never lack anything at all that I need. And Radak elaborates on this in 2b. I made the numbers of each source, by the way, until and including source 6, since there are 6 sentences. There are 6 psukim in our mizmor. The number of each source corresponds to the...
Oh, I never realized.
You see?
Wow.
No, this is the first time I did it. The only time I've done it.
No. Okay. I never realized that that they're just 6 psukim.
Okay. 2b. Radak elaborates on this, the haro'eh ha'tov noheg etzono v'ro'eh otam b'makom dasha. What does a good shepherd do? He takes his sheep, he shepherds them in a place that's filled with grass. V'sham yata'o alo, and there he pitches his tent, v'yira'em b'boker, he corrals them all in the morning, u'v'netot ha'yom u'v'eit ha'tzoharayim yarbitzein b'tzel ohalo. When the day is progressing and the sun gets hot, he's going to let them sit in, he's going to spread them out in the shade of his tent. Uksharotah lahashkotam, when he wants to give them to drink, what does he do? Yinahalem al Neim Minuchot. He's going to bring them not just to any water. He's going to bring them to calm waters. Some translated as still waters. It says here water in places of repose. You've heard still waters. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you why I don't like still waters. Still waters are not healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They get stagnant.
They get stagnant. There's a lot of green stuff in it that grows, and not good for the sheep to drink from. What's Neiminuchot? It's the calm waters. Because the rushing waters aren't good either, because the lamb isn't going to want to drink from such a scary kind of thing. But Neiminuchot is the smoothly moving waters. He says, Razak says, it's Klomar Mayim Sheyachu La'at. Water that's going to go slowly. Lo Nachal Shotev, not a flowing river. Because you don't want the water to overcome them, to flow over them when they're coming to drink. So you have this shepherd is bringing them to Binaot Jesha, in places of very lush grass. He's bringing him to come and graze. Ibn Ezra also explains at the end there, he says, why does it have to be such lush grass? What does the ground feel like in the mountainous areas?
Rocky.
Right, very uncomfortable. But the lusher the grass, the more their feet will be padded. Pasuk Gimel. So we start so far very clearly with this imagery of the sheep. And then Pasuk Gimel, Nafshi Yeshovev. My soul, he will bring back. In other words, when it strays, he'll recenter me. Yancheni b'magle sedek. He will lead me on circles of justice, circling paths of justice. Why Lima and Shimo? Anyone? Questions? Issues? Problems? I know it's late at night. Okay. I'll jump again here. Source number three, Amos Chacham brings to mind something very important. The Magle Tzedek, he says, what are these circling roads of justice? Kan hakavana ledrachim nechonot. Talking about straight roads, meaning very specific roads, pshutan kemashma'an, simply, klomar, meaning to say, drachim shehaoleif bahem eino to'er, that their paths, that he who goes on it cannot stray, meino ma'abed et darko, and cannot lose his way. So when I stray, he puts me back on a road that I cannot lose my way from. Why does he do it? Lima'an shimo. Continues Amos Chacham, Lefi ha-mashal le-ro'ev, like following this imagery of the shepherd, yesh lefares, we could explain, ha-ro'ev to-reach kokach le-tovat ha-tzon. Why is this shepherd working so hard to redirect me every time I go off the path? Le-tovat ha-tzon, for the good of the sheep. Kidei sh'avriyoti ha-leluhu ki-ro'ev no'eman, and so that all will see the shepherd and understand that he is a loyal, truthful shepherd. The parrot continues, Gam ki eilech begei chalmavet. Even when I walk, now here, I didn't mention this, I skipped this part before. One thing that really strikes me when I read this parak is that there's no mention of death in it at all. One of its closest associations that we have is with
the
times of loss, and yet, no. Chalmavet is not death.
I know, but that's the general.
So that's the thing. The only hint to death possibly is in a half a word. Isn't that something? Yeah. Chalmavet, by the way, is how the shadow tail.
Shadow tail. So why is this one said then?
So that's the end of the class. But it's just something interesting to point out to you that the whole thing has no reference, just like the whole Mizmor on Shabbos, we thought originally had no reference to Shabbos. Right. So, okay, be a little different. Amos Chacham explains, what is this valley of utter darkness? He explains, Afilu b'sha'ah she'yizdamim li lalachet b'makom amok v'chashuch. Even at a time when I have to go in a place that's very deep and very dark. Yesh she'haroeh noheget shono. He says this is a continuation of the imagery of the shepherd. There are some shepherds that they have to lead, sometimes they have to lead their sheep, b'ge'ayot hamukafot harim gvohim. Through valleys that are covered, you know, where the mountains go up and sort of meet each other, and you're going through almost a cave. That the cave is covering, the mountains sort of, they don't grow up, but they sort of form a cave around you so that you're not, Oh, I should have brought you that picture. My husband went to Israel last time. He went in this cave, and you go, and it's pitch black, and you can fit only one person through, and you get in there, and there's like a teeny little hole in the top of the cave, and you see the sunlight coming in, and it's
wow.
Not very, very cool. Anyway, all right. So Ibn Ezra says, okay, you know what? It's very nice that we're talking here about sheep and stuff. But what does this have to do with me? He's going to take a jump over a little bit to what this is connected to. And he says in source 4b, Gam, he says, Hata'am im tikrena gzerot ha-shamayim. If it will happen, if what will happen, decrees from heaven, Shashem gazar mi mekedem, that God had decreed from a long time ago, Lavo ra'a la'olam, to bring evil to the world, V'yidmeha ra'a l'gei tamavet. And this evil is similar to a deep, dark place. That's what he's comparing it to. So he says, forget, we're not talking anymore about the sheep going through a cave. We're now talking about people. We switched over from the mashal, from the metaphor, to the nimshal. What do you say? What's the
parable?
No, from what it symbolizes, from the symbolism to what it is symbolizing, that over to the people. He said, we're talking about when bad things happen and you feel like you're on the bottom of that deep, dark cavern, just to add a little lightness to it. Do you ever read the comic strip Rose is Rose?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite comic strips is Rose is Rose. And Rose occasionally, like all of us, gets into a real funk. And the cartoonist illustrates it so strongly. She's sitting in the bottom of this one person sized dungeon. It's like a cell with bricks going all the way up, 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 and she's just like stuck there on the bottom of this well. And that's how she, you know, and then somebody usually sends down a rope to pull her up. It's all figurative. She's not really in a dungeon. She's really just a regular person. But it's so strong, that imagery. You know what I'm talking about? When she's in that funk, because that's what you feel like. You know, you feel like you're in that bottom of that deep, dark well. So that's what he says he's talking about. But even in that case, lo irara, continues Ibn Ezra there, lo irasha ra'i elia. Even when I know that God is bringing this evil to the world, I'm not going to be afraid that this evil will happen to me. Why? Ki shiftecha yer eli hadarech ad she'eche. Because I know your staff will show me the way until I can get out of that deep, dark cave. You're going to light the way for me. This staff and this walking stick will comfort his heart. And the explanation is, when a year of bad things come to the world, God will surround with a protect and cover those who lean on him and those who strive for him, to keep them alive in a famine, and to save them from death. What kind of death are we talking about? Not the normal kind, like those who die from death and from a plague. He says, so even in those difficult times, I know that God is there and that his staff is going to lead me out. Two
staff?
Kinds of, so what is the staff? That's exactly 4D and 4C, and we're going to do 4D first. Radak has the questions, you know, it says shiftecha mishantecha, your staff and your walking stick. What the heck is it, your rod and your staff is how we translate that. Why do you need both? What's the difference between a rod and a staff?
Why does God need even one?
Well, it goes back again to our imagery of the shepherd and the sheep. So it's a little bit like, you getting confused yet when it talks about the imagery and when it talks about the real? Yeah, don't worry, it'll get better after it gets worse. Says Radak in source 4D, what's the shiftecha? What's the walk, the staff, the ra, I don't know which one, the shevet? Elu hayishirim. Those are the sufferings that God puts us through. What's mishantecha? Your Torah.
What guides us.
So it's the carrot and the stick. That both of them guide us. Says Amos Chacham explains it very well in verse 40. Shiftecha mishantecha, shevet umishemet, him shnei makalot tribidei haroed. These are two kinds of staffs that are in the hands of the shepherd. Hashevet Asoy Lahakot Bo Chayot Ra'ot. The Shevet is made to hit the bad animals. V'gam Mechaven Bo Et Arkan Shel Hatzon. And also to direct the way of the sheep. V'amishenet Asiya Sheyishayin Alah HaRo'eh. And the mishenet is made that the shepherd should lean on it, the lechtobin harim u'tzla'im. So he takes even a little bit of a different take on it. That one is to beat away all the evils, and the other is for me to lean on. But again, if you take the sufferings and the difficulties in life, and we've spoken about this before, that our approach to it and our attitude towards it is what shapes our relationship with God. And that you take these difficulties and use them to push through them and to get closer to God, and combined with the Torah, and that's what brings me back onto the straight path. He then switches gears totally to this set table. Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan, he says. He says Amos Chacham in source number 5, kan hinyach et imoy lasad. He's leaving alone, he's forgetting already now the imagery of the sheep. He's comparing himself to a guest that Hashem has invited to his house, the Orech L'Suzan. He set out for him a meal. Tarok Shulchan means set out the table for me, means Tachin Suza. Set the table, make me some food. And this is something that's happening all the time. When we say to Hashem, Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan, make for me a table, it doesn't mean make for me a table, it means you always are doing this for me, always setting this table. What's the idea of it being opposite my enemies? That even though my enemies are there, I know I can still sit. You are setting me this table, you are setting me this meal, I can sit there, I can eat from it and enjoy it. What do we really have? When you really see your enemies, are you going to sit down and eat a big meal? No, you're going to completely lose your appetite and probably everything you ate until then if you see your enemies before you, right?
Especially if you just finished reading Elie Wiesel's Night.
Yeah.
I just finished reading this, so like all of this is like,
it's very strong.
Whoa. Yeah. Very difficult. It depends on where a person is at.
What depends on where a person is at?
How you see this.
Yes, definitely. Definitely what your personal experiences are. All of it is, for sure. All of these prakim, we all come to it with our own personal perspective.
So are enemies always people specifically?
I don't think so. I mean, I've seen enough sources that talk about enemies being external or internal. To me, I mean, especially in this day and age, even though with 9/11 and all that stuff, I see us living in Detroit, Michigan as our stronger enemies that we have to fight being our inner demons, so to speak. And that's my personal take on these midrashim. I mean, on these mizmarim. I mean, thank God I'm not in a position, I'm not in Iraq, and I'm not, you know, facing enemies every day. But we all have our things that we need to fight about. You know, like that alarm clock in the morning, you know?
That's my
enemy. No, but it's like to fight that inner enemy that wants you to get to stay in bed. You know, when there are things that need to be done and things to do. I'm not talking about, you know, on Thanksgiving morning or Sunday morning or whatever if you don't have things to do. But, you know, but even then, let's say if you have opportunity to sleep late. There's late and then there's too late sometimes. You know that? When you, like, don't get out of bed, and then when you don't get out of bed, you're in that at the bottom of the dungeon again.
Right.
You know?
I should have, I could have, I would have, but I didn't.
And now I'm having a bad day, and that's it.
Right.
You know, we all have these things. I'm hoping we all, because otherwise I'm going to feel very abnormal here. I'm totally bearing my soul to you. You know,
I'm not telling you this from
other people's experiences. It wasn't only when I had small children.
Even if you don't.
And even before I had small children. It's everyone has their own yitzharas that they fight against. And it's called
the snooze alarm, right? Snooze
you know, and if you set the alarm for 20 minutes later, you would get 20 minutes good sleep instead of 20 minutes interrupted sleep from setting that snooze alarm 20 minutes earlier. Okay, so he says, God, you're always setting this table for me opposite my enemies, and I can sit there and eat. Not only that, he's setting the table for me, God, you rub my head with oil. This is something that was really done way back in those days, the equivalent of saying, I don't know, ooh, you give me a complete facial, a manicure, a full body massage, I don't know, insert your, whatever, your physical pleasure is here. And then Kosiru Mayam, my cup is always full. You know, I mean, I haven't been sending these events recently, but you know those events when you sit at and you finish your, you take a sip of water and the waiter's there like 3 seconds later? Yeah, no, not really in Detroit. It doesn't really happen. You're sitting there like, you know, taking the ice into your mouth. But, you know, but there are, like, you go to these fancy restaurants or fancy events or whatever, and you take a sip and the waiter's right there, fill your cup with water. And that's what we're talking about here.
Every time you leave the table, they reset your place and line up your glasses in your cup.
And fold your neck, and I don't know how to, and then I feel bad opening it up again, you know, which is why all my suits are always in the cleaners. This pasuk is talking about God is setting the table, he's feeding him, he's giving him this, rubbing this oil on him, he's always constantly refilling his cup. These are all the positive things. This is very parallel to the beginning of the Mizmor. It's talking about God bringing him to eat from the very lush fields, right, from the grazing areas, bringing him to drink from the waters, from the slow-moving waters. It's all very parallel, the first half and the second half. Then we move on to I'm sorry I did it back-to-back. I should have done it separately so that you could follow along in the Mizmor. He ends off the Mizmor. The last pasuk talks about a prayer to God. Ach tov v'chesed yirtifuni. I want that good and chesed should always chase after me. Kol yimei chayei, all the days of my life. V'shavti b'vid Hashem, and he utters this desire to always live in the house of God. So Ibn Ezra and Radak give very interesting takes on this. Ibn Ezra says in 6a, V'tam zeh ha-mizmor, he says, this whole mizmor is talking about avdei Hashem ha-ozvim tavan ha-olam, talking about servants of God who leave behind all the desires of the world. They're happy with their lot. We know people like this. There are no, you know, I'll tell you, we had this, I don't know, was it a year ago when that Lakewood thing came out that with the auction? You know, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago?
Yes.
Lakewood put out this
$50,000 kitchen or whatever for first prize.
Right. This unbelievable auction booklet. No, we don't do auctions in our family. We don't do any auctions, any raffles. Any of you want me to put your name on the one-stop raffle for Hanukkah, you know, I'll do it. Already all the cashiers have their names on my tickets. Like, we don't do raffles. But I got that auction booklet, and I was drooling. I mean, this kitchen with the marble countertops and the wooden cabinets and the size of the kitchen and the milchig and the parav and the fleishig and the pesach and all in one kitchen and all separated with the, you know, I don't know, it was probably like automatic doors in each part of the kitchen. Right, with a cook and a cleaner, you know, Alice right there in the kitchen. And I sat there drooling over this book. A couple weeks later, we had somebody over for dinner Friday night. We brought the book to the table. Did you see it? It was like a big scandal. And he looks at it and says, you know, not a bit appealed to me. And I, like, my eyes popped out of my head. And I looked at him and I said, why can't I be like that? So that's what this is talking about. These people who don't have these worldly desires. I mean, maybe he has other, maybe because there was no Xbox in there. I don't know. there were other things in it. There were other things in it. So he says, the heim smechim b'chalcham, they're happy with what they have. V'yachshivu ki lechem v'mayim k'neged kol tanug ha-matamim. And these people, they really truly think that bread and water are the greatest delicacies of the world. Right. This is about those people. These are the people that God is leading. Ki machshavtam b'libam al tanugei ha-olam haba. What are their thoughts and focuses on? The joys of the world to come. Al Kenya Nihu Tanuge Rega, so they leave the temporary pleasures, the Avor Tanugalam, for the eternal pleasures. Al Kenya Mar Zot Kol Machshavti, this is what I think that this whole mizmor is talking about. So what does it mean, b'tam yerdefuni, that all these things are going to chase after me? Kol kach argil etzmi lasot tov v'chesed. I will condition myself so much to do good and chesed. Tov l'nafshi, good for my own soul. V'chesed im acherim, chesed for other people, to do what? L'lamdeim, l'horatam, l'avodet Hashem, to guide them in serving God. Ad shiye lichok, that it will be like a rule by me, ki ilu ratziti l'haneach hatov rega achat, that if I want to leave that goodness that I'm doing and abandon it for even a moment, hayayu rodef acharai, it would run after me. I couldn't say no. We all know people like this also, who do chesed so much that they just can't drop it. The tam, the shavti, what does it mean? The shavti that I will sit in Hashem's house, pa'am achar pa'am, it's the desire to constantly, always, for all of my days, to sit in the house of Hashem and to learn His Torah, and that's it, and that's the end, and that's the person that we're talking about.
But we're also adonics.
Right, but there are people who are so devoted to the spirituality that they are on such a level, but that's what it's talking about. All right. So, Mrs. Dubin, your question that you asked 5 weeks ago,
yeah,
and 4 weeks ago,
yeah,
and 3 weeks ago, so who's it talking about? So, Mizmor Lidavid begins the Mizmor. And if you look in page 3, source number 7, Radak tells us, Medaber b'David b'sha'as ha'boreach mipnei Sha'ul. When did David write this? When he was running away from Sha'ul. Page number 3, source 7. There's English on the page. There's English on the page. You did this last year, perhaps those of you who did took Navi, who did the Navi class. This is after David is running away from Sha'ul. He comes to this city of Kohanim, and he's like, he has no weapons, he has no food, and the Kohen who's in the city helps him out, gives him food, gives him a weapon, and then David leaves. Vayelach David. David leaves there in Aleit Amaram Adulam, and he hides in the cave of Adulam. Vayishmu Achav, Achol Beit Aviv, his whole family heard this. Vayarduay Lav Shama, they came to him there. They joined him down there. Everyone who was in straits and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was desperate joined him. He had that great, you know, army. And he became their leader. There were about 400 men with him. David went from there to Mitzpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, let my father and mother come and stay with you until I know that God will do for me. So he brought them to the king of Moab. They stayed with him as long as David remained in the Mitzugah in this other place. Oh my God, none of y'all, David. The prophet God said to David, don't stay here. Go to the land of Judah. So where did David go? Vayelech David, vayavo ya'ar charet. He came to the forest of Charet and explained the Pirushim. Why is it called the forest of Charet? Because it was as dry clay. It was very, very dry. But God brought all this goodness to it that made it overflow with goodness. And what happened while he's there? Sha'ul hears that the people, that the Kohanim in this city saved David and abetted David and helped David. So he puts out the order to do what? To the entire city of Kohanim?
Kill them all.
To kill an entire city of Kohanim. Right? So, and he does this. And this is where David was. He was in this yair, in this forest, when all of this was going on. He found out about it afterwards, and then he goes and he asks Hashem, should I go fight the Plishtim or whatever? It's really good stuff. I recommend reading. This is when David wrote this parak. The God, Hashem is my shepherd. Hashem is going to take care of me. I am in this dungeon right now. I am in the darkest, deepest part, and I know that God is going to save me. He goes through, Radak goes through every single point in the Mizmor and shows exactly what David was referring to. What is this table that God set out for him? This is the kingship. That's what the kingship is all about. Who are his enemies? His enemies, Sha'ul, and a couple other guys also he mentioned. What is his desire? To sit in the house with God, to just sit in the Beit HaMikdash, to sit by the Aron. That's all he wants to do. He doesn't want any of this. He doesn't, but he knows that Hashem is going to lead him in the right way. He's in a position that he doesn't understand why he has to be there. You put oil on my head as a king. You anointed me as king. Like, very specific references that we have here. fine. So that's one opinion, that this is very closely, specifically related to David. The Midrash says something else. Okay, rip apart your paper so you can see the Midrash and the Parak at the same time. Just rip them apart. There you go. So you can keep the Parak, keep source 1 facing at the same time that you're looking at source 8. There's a conversation between Rabbi Elazar and Rav Shimon. Sha'al Rabbi Elazar, Rav Shimon, Ramarlo, he asked him the following question. It's a pretty good question. When the Jews left Egypt, did they bring any weaving looms? Did they bring any finger sewing machines with them? Amarlo, no. He said no. So he asked the question, so where did they get the clothes that they wore for all the 40 years? It's a good question, right? A technical question. So the Midrash answers, Amarlo, mimasher hilbishum malachei hasharet. From what the angels clothed them in. Amarlo, he said to him, didn't they stink from the stink of the sweat that they never changed their clothes? Amarlo, the answer was, that the air, the well of Miriam would bring to them all different kinds of sweet-smelling grasses and herbs. And they would shake in them. Shenamar, as it says, Binaot desha yarbitemi. In the sweet smelling grass, he spread me out. That's when they were correct, right? Vayarechan no daf mishofa lam ve'ad sofo. And the snow was so sweet that it, and strong that it stretched from one end of the world to the other.
First perfume.
Right. That's the story that's presented here in the Midrash of this conversation of what happened. So far, we have no reference, therefore, in our parak to the times when the Jews left Mitzrayim and to the clothing that they wore and how they were taken care of there. Almi menucho inahaleni, what's the water referring to, that he's leading the sheep to the water when they left Mitzrayim? What do you think it's referring to?
The
well of Miriam, right, that gave them water, went from tent to tent. The water, even, you know, there's a midrash that says that the water came all the way up to the tent.
Really?
So they didn't have to go down, like that there were irrigation.
Ditches.
Right. They didn't dig them, but that the water automatically went straight to their tent. Outdoor, indoor plumbing. You know, you're on the sewer system or septic tank. You know, I'm under the air system. Okay, fine. Good. That's what the Midrash says in the next part of source number 8. Source number 9 goes through a lot of pieces of the Midrash. Says this is talking about the man. And this is talking about what are the two staffs, one is the oral Torah, one is the written Torah, just to explain to you different references to the times when the Jews were in the desert, that's what the parak is talking about. But the bottom line is, as I mentioned to you at the beginning, and as you all know, that the time that's most known that we say this parak is at a funeral. And there are a few things that I want to point out to you before we discuss the significance of it, of why we do. I want to point out a few issues in the pack. Number one, we start off in the parak, God is my shepherd, right, with a very clear image. I'm going to translate two terms for you that I'm going to be using. One is a mashal, that's a symbolism. The other is an nimshal. That which is being symbolized. Okay? So I'm going to use those words. It starts off very clearly with the mashal. God is my shepherd. I'm not wanting anything. He's taking me to the lush grass, bringing me to the waters. And then it switches, it seems to switch right to the nimshal. Nafshi yeshoveh, my soul he brings back on the right path. Who has a soul? Do animals have souls? Only people have souls. So now we're switching from the metaphor to the nimshal. Yancheini b'magwei tzedek, he's going to bring me on these circuit, these round roads of tzedek, of justice. How could a sheep go on a road of justice? That's what people are going to go on roads of justice, not sheep. Gam ki eilich b'gei tzalma, that even though I'm going in the deepest, darkest part, who's walking here? It sounds very possible, like it's talking about man, and I'm not going to be afraid because you're with me. But then it goes back, your staff and your rod are going to be my comfort. Staff and rod is back to our mashallah of the sheep. And then we go through also with this whole thing of being a guest in Hashem's house. And all the way at the very end, the Shavti Vivet Hashem, my wish is that I live in God's house for always. This is back to the Nimshal. So you keep switching back and forth between the Mashal and the Nimshal. In addition, you'll notice that it switches back and forth between third person and second person. Hashem Rawi, God is my shepherd. That's third person. He leads me to the grass. He brings me to drink from the water. He returns my wandering soul. He returns me. He leads me onto that straight path for his name. This is all third person, third person, third person. And then all of a sudden, once he's in that foxhole, I won't be afraid because you are with me. His relationship with God changes from a third-person relationship to a second-person relationship. Your staff is going to comfort me. You constantly set the table for me. You rubbed my head with the oil. And then all the way at the end, v'shav to beveit Hashem, and I will dwell in the house of God for all days. So to just understand these very strange poetic issues that are going on here in the parak is that it's not a very cohesive parak in that particular way. However, we've mentioned this class before of having a beginning and end that seem to sort of go together, and Hashem is mentioned right in the first pasuk and also in the last pasuk. So he clearly is a central theme in this parak. So the question is, are we like sheep? Or are we actually sheep?
Hey,
so I want to bring to your attention another parak of Tehillim that we're not going to do the whole thing through, but I'm just going to read you a few pieces from it, from parak Memtet 49. This is written by the Bnei Korach, the people of Korach. As if you're familiar with reading Prakim and Tehillim, you'll see that some of the, says, Lamanatech Bnei Korach. Some of the Mizmarim begin that way. And the whole focus is about death. It's a very, hear this, all you peoples, give ear, all inhabitants of the world, men of all estates, rich and poor alike. My mouth utters wisdom, my speech is full of insight. I will turn my attention to a theme, set forth my lesson to the music of a lyre. In time of trouble, why should I fear the encompassing evil of those who would supplant me, men who trust in their riches, who glory in their great wealth? I cannot redeem a man or pay his ransom to God. The price of life is too high. And so one ceases to be forever. Shall he live eternally and never see the grave? For one sees that the wise die, that the foolish and ignorant both perish, leaving their wealth to others. Their grave is their eternal home, the dwelling place for all generations of those once famous on earth. Man does not abide in honor. He is like the beasts that perish. Also imagery to animals, but much different. Such is the fate of those who are self-confident, the end of those pleased with their own talk. There's the best part. Sheep-like, they head for Sheol with death as their shepherd. The upright shall rule over them at daybreak, and their form shall waste away in Sheol till its nobility be gone. But God will redeem my life from the clutches of Sheol, for he will take me. There's still a little further. They end off, man does not understand honor. He is like the beast that perish. Very similar theme, I mean different theme, but very down. And very. So why do we say our parak? At a funeral and in a shiva home. And I think that it's a response. I'm presenting you some of the ideas from Rabbi Baumel again. This is very much a response to that other parak, that maybe we are like sheep. You know, those are the Bnei Korach who are speaking. Maybe we are like sheep. But God is our shepherd. God is the one who's taking care of us. Life isn't about death. Life is about life. That God is taking care of me. He is leading me to green pastures. We are different than animals. We have a nefesh. Nafshi yeshoveiv. I have a nefesh. We lead our entire lives for the sake of God. We are comforted by the fact that God leads us back onto this ma'agolei tzedek, onto this path of tzedek. That whatever happens in our lives, that we know that the pursuit of justice is what it's all about. And serving God and the avoda of Hashem. Says this Mishmor, when you memorialize and commemorate a person who has passed away, don't spend your time thinking about how his future was cut off. but focus on the life that he led, on the guidance of the shepherd of God. This rod and staff is the bottom line. That's the focus. We've spoken about it a lot in today, but the rod and the staff is just a chamishan shachad. Sometimes Hashem gives us a patch, and sometimes he leads us on a little more gently. But both of the ways are what's necessary for us in order to get on the right path of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the comfort is, the level of comfort that you will derive from reading a parak like this directly correlates to our relationship with God and our ability to see the love and the beauty in everything that he does. And I think it's very beautiful. See, my grandmother would say it's true. She would probably say all the Yiddish stuff too, but I'm not going to finish. The focus of this parak is a focus on life and all the good things that God does for us. And it's something that's very interesting, it's very different about us as Jews, about our approach as from Jews, who dedicate and devote our lives to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what our view is on what life, that life is about life. And I'll tell you, we went last week, we were at the yahrzeit, I mentioned this before, for my father-in-law, 25th yahrzeit, and there's some very strong things that were said, some memories that were brought up that were very painful. My husband mentioned a memory that he had of watching his father. He was nine. My husband was nine when his father passed away. And watching his father learn with an oxygen tube in his nose, sitting and learning. But the evening we walked away from it, really feeling, I can't tell you, and I give, if my mother-in-law ever listens to this, I give you a lot of credit, that it wasn't a mourning of the loss as much of a celebration and a commemoration of what he stood for. And to look at his family and to see that of his seven children, every single one of them is from, and all the grandchildren were getting up there and giving a seal and whatever, that the way he lived his life was really such a, it was such a bracha that the way that his family was raised was really within the path that he led. And it's a great comfort to us when we follow Kadosh Baruch Hu's ways and we understand that Hashem, even if, let's say, we are sheep, but to have God as your shepherd is a pretty strong thing. So I wish you this week that you see the hands of the shepherd on your shoulder and that you feel that he's there, and that he's leading you to the greener pastures, and that he will pull you out of that deep, dark dungeon, come hell or high water, because that's what he's going to do.
That's what he wants.
Quite literally. I just finished teaching the marbles to some of my students.
Yeah, that's
so,
the high water. We'll just serve marbles people.
Yeah, so I did it, and I can't bring in some of my students to school. But, maybe this Shabbos they're coming. All right. Make it a good week.